This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscowane. Many school districts across the country are having to tighten their belts and make tough decisions about layoffs. That's particularly true here in Philadelphia, where the Philadelphia School District has been dealing with a deficit of hundreds of millions of dollars. It made a dent in those dollars, but not without a lot of pain. There's a standoff between the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers and Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett over the issue of seniority. The governor said he'd give the district $45 million if the PFT made some changes in their contract, including eliminating seniority. The union has said no. So should layoff decisions be determined by a policy of last hired, first fired? Should teacher quality, not seniority, govern these decisions? And how do you measure a teacher's effectiveness? And for that matter, how about teacher training and education? We are going to talk in this hour of Radio Times with Richard Ingersoll. He's a professor of education and sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. His work focuses on elementary and secondary schools as workplaces, teachers as employees, and teaching as a job. And Richard Ingersoll, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Mark.
Nice to have you here. So why has teacher seniority become such a hot-button issue? Is it because so many districts are having to make cuts?
Yes, that brings it to a head. But it's not a new issue, and it's long been a controversial issue. It can get quite heated, the debate surrounding this. And there's good reasons why. On the one hand, it's something of a no-brainer. We've all spent time in schools. We all know some teachers are better than others. Some teachers work harder than others. And then we find out that the way teachers are assessed and rewarded usually doesn't take into account their performance, their quality, etc. The current system, as you mentioned, is one where seniority, that is numbers of years put in teaching in the classroom, and also generally your graduate level credits, whether you have a master's degree, these are often the two biggest factors in a range of decisions: hiring decisions, pay decisions, promotion decisions, transfer across schools within districts, layoff decisions. And so there's a very valid complaint here. My gosh, we know teachers are different. We know some are better than others, but the way we evaluate them doesn't take that into account.
Let me pick up on that, because one of the arguments, I guess, for seniority is the belief that if you have spent 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years as a teacher, chances are you have some experience in the classroom, and that experience has got to pay off. One would assume that you might have gotten an advanced degree, or you got teacher training through the school or through the district, that the district has, in a sense, invested in your expertise, and that's why you're needed in the classroom.
Yes, and I think that those are also common sense and valid reasons why those two things should be factor. How much time I put in teaching, certainly it's common sense, and this is true, of course, in most lines of work, that one can get better with time. And then also if one gets some advanced degrees, advanced training, that should make a difference. So there's some validity to these two measures, but there's also just this crunch. People say, okay, fine, but, you know, again, isn't it common sense to take into account the caliber, the performance, the motivation, the effort of the teachers?
Well, and we've all been students, and we've all had, you know, terrible teachers that we know should have retired or been fired, or certainly have not been in the classroom. Some of us have had children who have had experiences like that. So I think, as you were saying earlier, we're all experts in this in some degree or another because we've had experience with teachers in our lives.
Yes, and that's why it's such a big issue. And it's a huge issue now in the whole realm of elementary and secondary education. So many states, like Pennsylvania, for instance, are now experimenting or trying to design new ways of assessing teachers that do more than just look at teaching experience and these post-undergraduate levels of training, of credentials. For instance, one of the more controversial methods is known as the value added. What this method tries to do is it tries to evaluate teachers according to how much gain on before and after tests their students have. So the idea is if my teachers gain 20 points on a math test, then and another teacher's students gain 5 points, then I'm a better teacher, and hence I should get a better salary increase. Hence I should be last to be laid off and those types of things. And so there's dozens and dozens of experiments now. This is a very fertile and controversial area. And I'm one of those who does hope that we can actually come up with better methods. Why not? Again, it's a no-brainer, but there's a huge but here.
Well, let me do a but, which is, am I a better teacher if my students perform 20 points better on, let's say, math than my counterpart in another classroom where they only gain five points? Am I a better teacher?
That's a great question, and that's the crux of the issue, and there's a huge argument either way. And think of it now. Think of all the factors that go into how well you and I score on a 10th grade math test. And surely the quality of our math teacher that year and the year before are factors. But think of all the other reasons. You know, our motivation, how hard we studied, our family background, the stability of the family, the poverty of the family, how much reading there is. Do our parents insist we do? I mean, think of it. There's dozens and dozens of factors. Now, can we accurately isolate the contribution the teacher makes? That's what those measures assume, and that's easier said than done. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into how I score on a 10th grade math test, and am I going to put too much blame or praise on the teacher's impact?
Well, and I'm also thinking about some teachers, you know, the bell rings at 3 o'clock, they're out the door. There are other teachers that are going to hang out with the students in their classroom. They're going to be involved in extracurricular activities. They might be the teacher that a student goes to if they're having some problem at home. I mean, it seems to me that's all part of teaching, but that's not going to show up on a test.
Yes. This new category or type of assessments known as value added, it wants to put all its eggs in the basket of gains on these mass-produced, machine-scored, standardized tests. And of course, that ignores the fact there's lots of other things teachers are asked to do. There's other aspects to the teaching job other than driving up our students' scores on tests. I mean, think of it. You mentioned them. I mean, you know, one definition of the good teacher is the person who teaches beyond the test. He teaches the students how to think creatively in a sophisticated fashion, critically. Another definition of the good teacher is someone who promotes the self-esteem and the personal growth of students. Even another one is the teacher that, you know, makes mature and good citizens. Another definition of a good teacher is one who's sensitive to cultural and racial differences and cares about these issues. So start to think of all the many different hats a teacher wears. And that makes it clear that it's not quite so easy to assess who's the good teacher. I mean, the good teacher at raising scores may not be the best teacher at developing good citizens.
Well, and we're talking about a whole bunch of things that fall under this heading of seniority. But I was also thinking about the fact that something like half of teachers leave the profession, almost half, within 5 years. So you've got a core group of teachers that are staying on and a lot of churning in those first 5 years.
Yes, we've done a lot of research on that. And generally, somewhere between 40% and 50% of those hired in a given year are gone from teaching within 5 years. And some of them do return later. Maybe they've left to raise babies or get a degree and whatnot. But, of course, there's this huge churn, and that's a very big factor in the quality of schooling and whatnot. I mean, if experience counts, then if someone leaves in 2 years, they've left before they've gotten good, in a sense. Yeah. There's a waste of talent going on there.
But there are those examples of a first or second year teacher who is just head and shoulders above everybody else. And when it comes to layoffs, that person is going to be laid off under a seniority system. And I know anecdotally that can be upsetting to parents who want this teacher for their kids, certainly upsetting for kids and for a particular school.
Yes, yes. And that's one of the reasons why there is so much heat and controversy surrounding the use of seniority. That you have these striking cases where a top teacher, you know, last hired, first fired, and hence that gives impetus to the movement to get some other measures beyond seniority. But as I was saying earlier, easier said than done. And I think this is one of those cases where if we don't look at history, we're doomed to repeat old mistakes. There's nothing new about the argument, the idea to have some kind of measures of quality, performance, caliber of teachers. Often merit is the word used. And
Right. We
have a century of attempts at merit pay, pay per performance in the teaching occupation, the vast majority of which have failed.
So does that mean we can't create a system to evaluate teachers, or we don't know how to do this?
Well, I'm an optimist. I would like to see us develop something that works, that sort of faces up to and addresses the reasons for the earlier failures, instead of just sort of mindlessly going ahead and repeating the same mistakes. I mean, I'm one of those who likes to think that, yes, it's very difficult, but we could come up with more accurate, fair, objective, and also not expensive means of distinguishing teachers, particularly the really good from the really, really poor. And I think there's a lot of experimentation going on right now. And, you know, the state is talking about implementing a new thing. I'd like to see how that works out.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sense passing judgment on it yet. I'm one of those who's hopeful. Generally, I would think that we're probably going to need to have multiple measures, several measures that capture different aspects of good teaching.
Well, I would assume, and this is something that the state is beginning to look at, which is looking at in-class performance, or I guess doing an in-class evaluation. I assume that's pretty common these days. And then using some information from data about testing. I mean, do you see it sort of as a common, let's say a principal comes in and looks at a teacher. Is that a valuable way to determine whether they're a good teacher or not? I guess it depends on the principal.
It depends on the principal. Certainly that is actually one of the traditional means of assessing teacher quality, was these classroom performance observations, they are called. I'm a former high school teacher. The principal would come in with their checklist in hand. They sit at the back of the classroom. They watch you for an hour or something and do the little checklist. And, this, in fact, is one of the more criticized methods of assessing teachers by sort of all sides, in a sense. I mean, in fact, one of the reasons why the two-factor model was come up with historically, that is, we're going to base measures of teacher quality on seniority and on these graduate-level credits, is because the old ways of doing it, where the principal was basically the person who decided who was great, who was good, and who was not, that was so rife with favoritism and cronyism and corruption and et cetera, that it was universally agreed that it wasn't very good. And so hence this objective system was implemented earlier in the last century. I mean, just think about it. Schools are often places where there's a lot of conflict between teaching staff and administration. And
hold on to that thought, only because they're playing my song. We have to take a very short break. We're talking about the debate over teacher seniority. And again, Richard Ingersoll from the University of Pennsylvania, our guest. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. And stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY comes from Delaware Valley College. Delaware Valley College offers a Master of Arts in Policy Studies that prepares students to take leadership roles in developing policies to address important issues impacting our communities. Students can choose from food and agriculture, sustainability and environment, or community and international development. More information about a Master of Arts in Policy Studies is available online at delval.edu/grad.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents the Mendelsohn Club's 140th Anniversary Concert, Friday, October 25th in Verizon Hall. This program of celebratory works for choir and organ includes Benjamin Britten's Jubilate Deo, Louis Vierne's Solemn Mass, and Charles Ives' Psalm 90. The evening features organ soloist Michael Stairs and commentator Michael Barone of American Public Media's Pipe Dreams. Tickets for the Mendelsohn Club's 140th Anniversary Concert at KimmelCenter.org.
Political cartoonist Tony Auth worked for the Philadelphia Inquirer for nearly four decades before joining WHYY's Newsworks.org. Now experience his work in his new home, WHYY, to stir, inform, and inflame. A thought-provoking exhibition of Tony Auth's work runs now through November 8th. The exhibition was organized by the James A. Michener Art Museum in Doylestown, to stir, inform, and inflame. For hours and information, whyy.org/events.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Aim. We're talking about the debate over teacher seniority. As school districts across the country struggle with serious budget shortfalls, teacher layoffs have become widespread. That's certainly here in Philadelphia. Who to lay off, how, and how districts make these decisions has become the focus of intense debate when it comes to school funding and education quality. Should layoff policies be dictated by things like last in, first out, or should teacher quality govern decisions? And if so, how do you measure a teacher's effectiveness? Again, our guest, Richard Ingersoll, professor of education and sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. And you can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You were talking about the difficulty of a principal evaluating a teacher, because sometimes schools are contentious places where there can be, you know, very outspoken teachers that principals don't necessarily like or agree with.
Yes. Well, this was a criticism historically for the original system, was where principals unilaterally made these decisions. And hence, it was one of the reasons why historically this current existing system came in, where we fell back on these objective measures, so to speak, that didn't involve subjectivity, supposedly. That is, how many years you put in, surely experience matters. How much graduate level credits you have, surely that helps you be better. And of course, now we have all those criticisms of that. You know, you had mentioned earlier, or it's often found that when people look at the data on principals' evaluations, almost everyone passes.
And they get a satisfactory, right?
Right. And so then there's this skepticism of it. And, you know, one of the arguments is that principals might be loath to evaluate people down with that they've got to work with, and they've got to make this school. I mean, good schools take teamwork. There's, you know, they're not just an office or a factory. They're also something of a family. And so principals might be very reticent to give a lot of low scores and differentiate. And so that's been one criticism, is that, you know, it finds that everyone's above average, and that's sometimes doesn't sort of pass the common sense test. But it doesn't mean that principals couldn't be a player in a person, you know, in this evaluation system. There's been a lot of good thought to this. And, you know, one idea is that if part of the assessment is principals in classroom evaluation of teachers, well, then have a very transparent and clear set of criteria. So it's clear to everybody, here's what the principal's looking at. That's one thing. Maybe have a third party come in here to see.
Maybe outside observers.
Yes, do that too, or have more than one, where then that can help rule out the favoritism. And then also, in turn, hold the principals accountable for this. So then there's going to be maybe less overscoring everybody, but also a tendency not to use it as an opportunity to get at someone who is against some initiative you had proposed. So there's things that can be done to make these evaluations better and fairer, and that's really where I'd like to see, you know, things go in terms of reform.
But what you hear from people who favor seniority and often from unions is that, look, we worked hard to preserve these rights for teachers, and that school districts can go after senior teachers because they cost more. It's a cost savings for a district, and we don't want to have them cherry-picking who to lay off and going after some of these senior teachers in order to save money. I mean, it seems like that's also a cogent argument.
Yes, and that's a valid fear. I mean, we certainly have industries out there. You read about it in the business section in the Inquirer, where, you know, it's the most senior, most expensive people, regardless of quality, are the first laid off for economic reasons. And, you know, management can make a case for that. In the case of schools, you don't want senior people who are really good laid off. So, you know, so the union has some valid fears here, and they're, again, looking at a century of failed attempts at these things. So, but on the other hand, you know, this reflects sort of my thinking is, instead of simply arguing against this new range of reforms out there to do teacher assessment differently. Many of these ideas may be silly. Why not get it in front and try to get on board with developing something which gets beyond seniority, but is fair, is objective, and is also cost-effective? In other words, who best to know whether a assessment system is fair than the employees being assessed? This is really the professional way of doing things, the professional model. Lawyers, doctors, professors, self-collective collegial assessment is the norm. At University of Pennsylvania, we professors evaluate our colleagues on their we have a major say in that in terms of their promotion, et cetera. So that's what I'd like to see, get teachers more involved, because, you know, one of the banes of employee assessment in any industry is if it's not viewed as fair and objective and meaningful to the employees being assessed, it'll fall flat. And, you know, your best performers might be the first to leave. So it's important to get it right. So why not develop a model where those employees, those teachers, are part of the development from the beginning? That's sort of where I wish the reform movement would go.
But it sounds like you're saying, in a sense, sort of professionalize then the evaluation system.
Yes. I mean, rather than some experts in Harrisburg or in D.C., who may have never taught deciding this, or someone from some think tank. You know, I mean, we professors are asked to be experts and consult on these things all the time. And what I'd suggest is, okay, bring in some of those people, particularly if they sort of know the research and what we've learned from science about what works and what doesn't, but also bring the teachers in. Bring the teachers into the discussion. And then we can get something that might work and get beyond this old system.
Well, let me bring in some callers here because the phones have exploded. Every time we talk about education and teaching, the phones do explode. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. If you're just joining us, Richard Ingersoll, our guest, professor of education and sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. We're talking about a whole host of things, including teacher seniority, determining teacher quality, the fact that so many school districts have to figure out how to deal with serious budget shortfalls, and many of them are having to make decisions about layoffs, and how should those decisions be made that are fair to everybody? It's a very important question. Let me get, it looks like Andrea from Wayne, Pennsylvania, to join us. Andrea, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome.
I had a question with regard to the evaluation of the teachers. Has there been any look at combining the different evaluation systems that have failed before? And maybe it's an issue of providing elements of each of those systems and combining them in. That way you don't have all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. And further to that, has any system used student evaluation of the teachers as part of it? I mean, what better than to ask the consumer who they think are the good teachers? I think you had a program on several weeks ago where you were looking at educational systems from around the globe, and the researcher there was quoted, I believe it was Finland, was rated the top educational system, and it was related to the quality of their teachers as well. And she said it was very evident and very easy and very simple that she just would talk to the students, and it was abundantly clear that they knew and could state who the good teachers were.
Well, and yeah, Andrea, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I mean, I think that's probably true in all schools, is that students do know who the good teachers are, Richard Ingersoll.
Well, yes, I think the caller, Andrea, has made a couple good points. One, why not combine measures, particularly if teachers have these different roles and there's different definitions of what the good teacher is and does, then we're going to need multiple measures, and I think that's the way to go. And so someone might not be high or low in all of them. It might be a mix. They might have strengths and weaknesses. And so then, you know, not only it could be more accurate, but it also can be a developmental. It can help that teacher get better. Now, certainly having students evaluate teachers could be one of those measures. And in fact, this is widely used in higher ed. When we professors teach courses, there's student evaluations, and those go into the evaluation of the professor, of the instructor. But, I mean, beware here that sometimes there's criticism of these measures. I mean, for instance, one might picture a situation where the toughest, the most rigorous teacher in 6th grade or 11th grade, you know, who maybe flunked some students, maybe their evaluations go down simply because of their toughness. And, you know, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know what the research tells us on that, but certainly that's a widespread feeling out there that if teachers or college professors are evaluated by their students, they're loath to fail too many students. So you have to be careful. I mean, think of it. Would you want your annual salary increase, the decision, to be based on what your fifth graders thought of you? And I think the caller's right. There's valid information there. But I think that's a tricky one, too.
Well, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and she mentioned the guest we had on a couple of weeks ago, and she did look at three different school systems, one in Finland, one in Poland, and one in South Korea. The Finland one seemed to have the most dramatic results and improvements, and in part, she said, because of the professionalization of the teaching staff, as they got rid of these kind of education colleges and really taught teachers how to teach particular subject as opposed to how to manage a classroom?
Well, yes. Teacher education, how we prepare those who want to be teachers for the job is another sort of parallel, huge source of criticism and heat and controversy. And there's different ways to skin this cat, and other countries do it in other ways. And we have our own way of doing it. It's rather unusual. When we invented the public school system over a century ago, we had to upscale. We had to, all of a sudden, when schooling became universal, we had to hire a whole lot of people. And so we developed a very, very large number of teacher colleges, places where you could go. They were inexpensive. They were widely dispersed. They were low low gate, wide bar. In other words, they were easier to get in. They weren't rigorous like engineering or something right. like that. And we've kind of stuck with this system. And there's a lot of criticism out there. And as far as I can see, the quality of teacher preparation varies dramatically. And we need to do work on that too.
Let me get Elliot from Montgomery County to join us on Radio Times. Elliot, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, I certainly understand that when we talk about public schools versus independent schools, the analogy breaks down in a lot of ways. But at least when it comes to evaluating teachers, why can't we assume that this is a problem that has been solved and probably solved well by our independent schools, and that the public school system has a lot to learn from what the independent schools have achieved?
Elliot, let me see what our guest has to say. Have you looked at independent or private schools versus public schools?
Well, somewhat. And, of course, one of the arguments in favor of private schools is that the assumption is they have better teachers, and the argument is that they're able to evaluate based on performance and merit. It's unclear, despite the conventional wisdom, that the teachers in private schools are a higher caliber in this country. I mean, that's what we call an empirical question. I don't know that the assumption's true. I mean, note that the salaries in private schools are generally far lower than in public schools. And I do research on this. There's a very large flow of teachers every year from private schools to public schools, you know, switching jobs, and there's very little flow in the other direction. So, but you're right. I mean, certainly public schools can learn from those models. Again, I would say some of the same caveats apply. If it's all based on the headmaster at a private school, well, then the question is, what are their criteria? Are they fair? What kinds of favoritism is there, et cetera? Is it a clear and transparent system? Is there any accountability, et cetera? So I think the same things apply there for private. And of course, they apply in any line of work, any occupation. Employee assessment is often difficult. I think perhaps more difficult in teaching because of the nature of the work.
Elliot, thanks for the call. Let me see what Michael from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Michael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I've been teaching for very many years, and I wanted to underscore one point, which is that my peer-to-peer evaluations from my professors in college were the most valuable because they understood the subject matter. So that was just one piece to underscore. I also just want to mention that we could say there's a formative and a summative component to education. The formative component happens in the room. They're learning, they're getting it. And the summative part is how we assess the progress in a summary fashion. And it seems like we're able to really handle the summative part well. We can look at the tests and we can judge things. But how could we quantify the formative approach? How could we assess that maybe in a better way?
Well, that's really the issue, which is how do you determine in a classroom if there's good teaching going on? What do you think, Richard Ingersoll?
Well, that's an excellent distinction. So formative and summative, in other words, is the evaluation to really figure out how good you are and hence base these decisions like pay, promotion, and layoffs. Or is it also to help you to get better, to identify strengths and weaknesses? And those are two different purposes, which sometimes get kind of mixed and merged in unhappy ways. But you're absolutely right. Those are two things. They're both important. And some of the summative things may or may not be useful. I mean, if a teacher simply gets some score sheet showing how much their students gained versus other teachers, okay, so then you learn that your students didn't gain as much on a particular test, on a particular day, in a particular grade and subject, but it doesn't tell you how to improve that, and that's where formative assessment is really important. You know, feedback for teachers, and that's what we often haven't had in the past, and so that's a key part that needs to be in there.
Well, and he underscored the peer-to-peer evaluation, that the teachers are evaluating each other, which may be less loaded than the principal.
Yes. And that's what I mentioned earlier, that professions often do. Peers decide. This can be difficult. This can be difficult in higher ed. I mean, if you like someone but you don't think they're a very good professor, there's a tough decision point for an individual to make there. But yes, that's where I'd like to see some of these models from professions, these ways of doing it, be brought into teaching. This whole thing about how teachers involved with the design and the implementation and peer-to-peer, and I think the caller makes an excellent point there.
We're almost up on another break here, but I think so many public school teachers feel so embattled. You know, they just feel that, especially working in, let's say, poor districts where it's difficult to teach when there's so many problems, children bring so many problems to the classroom.
Well,
do you have sympathy for that?
Yes, I have a lot of sympathy for that. A former high school teacher, and I don't mean this as a criticism of being a professor, but a high school teaching was the most difficult job I ever had to do well. It may not be difficult to be a poor high school teacher, but to be a really good one, that takes so much skill. It is very difficult, and it takes a tremendous amount of energy. And clearly now, there's been so much criticism in the last few years of teachers in the teaching occupation. Some of it fair. Again, you know, the evaluation system that doesn't take into account performance. But that's been demoralizing, I think.
Well, let's take a short break. We'll pick up on that. And that's our guest, Richard Ingersoll. He heard that music and he stopped talking. He's a professor of education and sociology at the University of Pennsylvania, talking about a very important topic in this hour of Radio Times, teacher seniority, how to evaluate good teachers in classrooms. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Morristown Friends School proudly supports WHYY and is hosting an admissions open house on Sunday, October 20th at 2 p.m. Founded in 1785, Morristown Friends offers rigorous academics coupled with a spiritual and ethical education program for students in preschool through grade 12. More information, multimedia, and all open house dates can be found online at mfsopportunities.org. mfsopportunities.org.
So is eating lox and going to summer camp enough to call yourself a Jew?
I'm just as likely to read the story of the Tower of Babel in the Bible as I am to read a story by Isaac Babel and get as much inspiration from one as I do from the other.
Millennials who call themselves secular Jews kick off our series, Young Nation Under God. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Widener University supports WHYY. Widener offers graduate degree programs including physical therapy designed to give students real-world experience in student-led physical therapy clinics. Widener graduate programs are designed to combine challenging and engaging classroom work with applied learning to help jumpstart your career. Learn more at an open house on Tuesday, October 22nd from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 22nd from 5 to 7 p.m. Registration at widener.edu/leadership. Widener Leadership works.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about the roots of the seniority system in education, also some of the pros and cons, and why it's become such a hot-button issue when it comes to education policy and reform. We've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499, and we've got emails as well at radiotimes@whyy.org. In fact, let me read another email. This is Allison. She's a Philadelphia public school parent. And does the current climate of austerity in Philadelphia make the issue of seniority more high profile than in well-funded districts? And to be honest with you, Allison, I mean, one of the reasons we wanted to do this show is because we know that this is a sticking point between the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers and Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett. What do you think, Richard?
That's absolutely the case. In other words, when we're looking at layoffs, all of a sudden the decision rises to the fore: on what basis do we make these layoffs? Is it going to be seniority, last hired, first fired? Is it going to be some combination of things? And if so, is it going to try to include some measures of the caliber, the quality of the teachers? So, yes, as soon as you have these economic downturns, then your layoffs become an issue, and then this debate resurfaces. Nothing new about this debate.
Let me see what Nick from Kensington has to say. And Nick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Also on the politics of this. I'm a liberal Democrat, but this is really the only issue where I consider myself a centrist. It seems like politicians on the right are unwilling to admit that good teachers are underpaid and underappreciated. And then you have politicians on the left really unwilling to admit that teacher unions do protect bad teachers. I guess I'm just wondering, are there any politicians I'm not aware of that do advocate on this issue from the center, like I'm describing?
Nick, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Is there, I don't know if they're politicians, but are there people in the middle? Perhaps you're one of those, Richard, which is sees both sides of this issue.
Yes, I think it's an excellent point. I don't know if I can come up with names of politicians that are in sort of that, I'd like to call it the intelligent, thoughtful, common sense middle. But yes, there are people, and there's experiments out there. So Denver is well known the last few years where they got all the important parties, including the teachers, on board and tried to come up with a new evaluation system. I understand there's some kinks and some issues, and hopefully they're trying to work that out. It's called ProComp. So I think I'm hopeful, and I think there are experiments that try to be not polarized and combative, but thoughtful. And I agree with your earlier characterization. I mean, on the right, sometimes you get this thing where there's sort of this disparagement of teachers and don't want to acknowledge that it's often not particularly attractive job. I'm generalizing there, but pay and respect and working conditions. And on the other hand, you might have the other side on the liberal left that sometimes doesn't want to acknowledge the hard facts that teachers do vary, and we don't do a very good job of taking that into account in our reward system.
I was also reading that this having to do with seniority, that poor performing schools generally have less experienced teachers. I guess with seniority comes choice in where you want to be working as a teacher, so that when there are layoffs, it's the poor performing schools that get hit harder because those are where the experienced teachers are. This is a sort of convoluted question here. Do you think there's some truth to that?
Yes, and there's kind of a double whammy where if you have a school that's really having a lot of difficulties, there tends to be more teacher turnover. There tends to be more teachers going to another district or trying to get into another school in that district. And so that means the overall staff generally is younger and less experienced because there's a revolving door. So they're younger. So if you do implement seniority-based layoffs, that same school that already loses a lot of teachers every year is going to lose even more. So there's kind of a double whammy aspect. And I know this became a huge issue in Los Angeles a couple years ago where they wanted to exempt the revolving door schools, particularly middle schools in the district, from layoffs because there was sort of insult to injury.
And the idea of bringing in some more senior teachers to provide some kind of ballast or security for a school?
Yes, to try to achieve some kind of mix of newcomers and veterans and middle-termers, if we can use that phrase. And I think there's some research out there that shows that a mix is really good. And, you know, that's probably true for lots of types of organizations and occupations.
Let me see what Dan from Voorhees, New Jersey, has to say. Dan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My idea is that motivated to save money, I believe what's occurring is an unfair treatment of older, more expensive, more highly paid teachers, unequally evaluating them as compared to other less newer teachers who are paid less. And is there a way to identify when this process occurs?
When the idea of disadvantaging senior teachers, you're saying, Dan?
Laying heavily on them, evaluating them, scrutinizing them unfairly, on a case-to-case basis, you could probably identify it. But is there a way to look over the whole process and tell that this is going on?
Well, let me find out. First of all, is that a problem, do you think, Richard?
Well, it could be in some places, and certainly you read about that in other industries where, you know, regardless of quality, we were mentioning this earlier, that the most senior people are laid off. I've heard that's happened in the newspaper industry. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, seniority is, in fact, one of its purposes is to stop that kind of thing from happening. That could well be the case. You can save money. And so, you know, to prevent that from happening, there's seniority, but there could be other things that can be done. You know, again, if you have a transparent process that's clear, that's not arbitrary, it's not up to whoever's doing it, you know, then the idea is that to come up with a fair system that doesn't, that is not unfair to different experienced teaching groups.
Let me ask you, we've been focusing on things like layoffs, so depressing, and how to decide who to lay off in a school. But let me flip it around. When you look at a good school or an effective school, what are some of the criteria? And I'm thinking things like strong leadership. I mean, you need a really good principal who knows what he or she is doing. Probably parent involvement. That's probably another good sign of an effective, high-functioning school. What else are the criteria?
Well, you know, it turns out that kids vary, and so it's hard to come up with a one-size-fits-all model. You know, that maybe works in the auto industry. It doesn't work in this industry, quote-unquote. And so we have a great deal of research that shows that the good school allows teachers quite a bit of discretion and autonomy. And this is one of the problems with a standardized curriculum, you know, that we want – and there's something to be said for consistency. We want all the, you know, fifth grade or, you know, eighth grade math teachers to be in the same section of the same text on the same day and use the same tests. And, okay, there's maybe something to be said for consistency. But the catch is that students in this classroom are different from that. And good teaching requires thinking on one's feet. And it requires that kind of discretion. And so the good school has a lot of that. The schools with that kind of autonomy and discretion also turns out, no matter poor, not poor, private, public, have better teacher retention.
Which makes sense, right?
Which makes sense.
You would want to work there.
Yes.
Because someone trusts that,
yes,
you know what you're doing in a classroom.
We just finished a study. The strongest factor behind the high quit rates of math teachers, it's not salary, it's not student discipline problems, it's lack of discretion and autonomy in the classroom, which has decreased over the years because of the testing environment and standardized curriculum. This is the major factor. And, you know, and this is something that could be fixed. I mean, fixing salaries is expensive, but allowing math teachers to have a bit more discretion. You could still have your tests and your,
sure,
accountability.
Sure.
But, you know, don't tell me how to get from A to B. You can insist I get to B, but let me figure it out. I'm a professional. I'm an expert. I know my students better than someone in Harrisburg.
Let me, we got another emailer, or actually a caller who couldn't stay on, wanted to know, have unions outlived their usefulness in terms of this issue from your perspective?
Have unions outlived their usefulness in terms of this issue?
Of seniority and retention?
No.
Layoffs?
No, no. I'm a former high school teacher, and, you know, the job would pay even lower than it does if it weren't for unions. So there's a role here. But like I say, I'm also a critic sometimes of unions in the sense that, I mean, here's a long-standing, contentious, difficult issue. Instead of sticking with the seniority system, which has valid criticisms, let's see if we can actually get together and get out in front of this and develop something that works. I'd like to see that happen. And, you know, to be fair here, this is the largest occupation in the nation, elementary, secondary teaching. The unions are huge. There's a lot of variation and different views on this issue within the two large national unions. So you can't tar it with one brush.
You were saying, actually, before we went on the air, that there are now more women teaching than there has been in, I guess, what, in the recent past?
Yes, yes. When the public school system was invented, it was made quite intentionally into women's work, and it's long over the last century been a predominantly female line of work. However, interestingly enough, in the last couple decades, it's become even more so. And this is somewhat surprising because many, many other lines of work, occupations, have opened up to women. I mean, for instance, accounting, you know, a heavy math subject, male-dominated, is no more. Over half the accountants in the country are now female.
Huh.
But despite this, the numbers have gone up. From the early 80s, it was about two-thirds of all elementary, secondary teachers were women. Now it's past the three-quarters mark. We have an increasing number of elementary schools that don't have a single male teacher in them. And this is a trend that we don't entirely know. We don't know why it is, and we don't know what the effects might be. But certainly, a lot of the public would like to see male role models in schools.
But it sounds like men are not going into the profession, right?
Well, not at the rates women are. And you're going to ask why, and all I can say is, well, we don't entirely know yet.
I was going to ask you,
you know, the
why.
Science is slow going.
Well, let me see what Karen from Folsom has to say. Karen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there.
Hi there.
I was wondering, the seniority, I'm in a suburban school district, and our teachers do fairly well with their compensation. And I'm almost wondering if the seniority systems and the you can earn more if you have more education, college and more credits, and if that doesn't lock in teachers that maybe would like to change professions or get out of the teaching profession, but they're locked in because, you know, if you've been teaching, you know, kindergarten or first grade for 10 or 15 years, and, you know, you have your seniority, but maybe I read somewhere the average person changes careers three times in their life. And maybe it's time, you know, you're kind of done with five-year-olds. But you're locked in. Where else can you go with all that education you have in educating people? And now if you leave, you've left behind your seniority. You perhaps aren't going to get the pension you were promised.
Mm.
I wonder if the teaching profession doesn't lock in teachers that maybe after a while don't want to be there but have no alternatives.
Well, Karen, let me see what our guest has to say. Do you think there's...
Well, certainly there could be truth to that. And the criticisms made, for instance, that the pension systems are backloaded, that is that you don't just get the same amount of increased pension for every year you put in as a teacher, that it goes along at a certain pace, and then after several decades, it all of a sudden jumps. But, you know, part of this was intentional. It was to promote retention.
Right.
This is a high turnover line of work. I mean, Marty earlier mentioned this finding we have from our research, which is that, you know, 40 to 50% of those that go into teaching are gone within 5 years. This is a high turnover line of work, that the quit rates are higher than the traditional professions like law or academia or engineering or accounting. They're even higher than nurses. So you know, there was good reasons to try to promote some retention and not make it just a temporary line of work. So on the other hand, you know, I guess you could be retaining both the good and the not so good, and that's a downside there.
We only have a minute or so before we have to say goodbye. But do you worry about our public health public school system, its future? I mean, we're living in a very competitive world environment now.
Yes, I worry about it. And as a former high school teacher, I do get distressed at the negativity. You'll have people that never have taught before write some essay in Time magazine or something lambasting the teachers. And, what's that phrase about if just walk in someone else's shoes for a week, if they might try that? I mean, before they write their article and make a lot of money in Time magazine, why don't they get a job as a substitute teacher and do it for a few weeks? And they might have a very different view. So I have a bias there. Teaching is tough work. It's often not well rewarded and certainly not well respected often. That's not always the case. I don't want to make blanket generalizations. And that does worry me, yes.
And again, we're almost out of time here, but do you think, I mean, can we come up with a system that is a true evaluation of a teacher, do you think? I mean, it's clearly we're struggling on this, but.
Yeah, I think we can. I think we can. I'm very optimistic. It's got to be nuanced. It's got to be thoughtful. It needs to get the teachers on board with the design of it. Certainly there's ways. I mean, every occupation has its difficult. I mean, how do we evaluate nurses? The product is patient care. How do you measure that accurately? So these difficulties aren't unique to teaching. Teaching's maybe amongst the more tricky. But yes, I think we can do it. I hope we can do it.
Richard Ingersoll, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times. He heard that music. Professor of Education and Sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. Again, another very important discussion about education. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook and Twitter and podcasts and the archives. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.